You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Donald Trump gave a sedate speech last night, and the media reverts to form. Meanwhile, new executive order, supposedly for the sake of national security, on a revised immigration ban due today, is going to be put off so that the Trump administration can bask in the glory of a speech that was delivered.
Hold off on the racism for just a second.
Well,
like
but
some nice headlines.
National security. It's national security.
Actually, also the president's mental health is national security.
Also on the program today, Donald Trump still clearly has no repeal and replace plan. Republicans meeting the Capitol today to hammer it out. And more reason to delete your Uber app. The EPA unshackles businesses by letting them pollute our water. And Trump speculates the Jews are behind some recent anti-Semitism.
Reverse Jews.
Just Jews. Like them.
That's what people do.
They read. Meanwhile, weak Dems beg Trump for sellout cover. And Attorney General Jeff Sessions, feds will no longer monitor troubled police departments.
I just feel that trouble is best settled outside of the purview
trouble.
Of the federal government. As an example, there was a lot of troubles in our parts of the world in the 1960s.
All that and more on today's program. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know at what point yesterday I mentioned it on the show. I don't know if it was in the fun half or the non-fun half. We had anticipated a guest today, a conservative writer who writes about health policy, sort of. And she was pitched to me multiple times by her PR agency to come on the show. I finally said, yeah, let's do this. This could be interesting. And then all of a sudden they ghosted. If we had been talking directly to the writer, then I would say her name, but I'm not going to, because maybe the PR people got fired. Maybe the PR people made a mistake. I mean, it's also more than likely they realized, like, oh, wait a second. This isn't going to be something where you just go on this this show and you can just spout and you'll have no questions. You're actually going to have to justify the program that you are promoting. I'm just looking at some of the headlines and some of the stuff.
Wait a second. You want to substantiate what we're arguing on your program? We're going to have to reassess this whole booking.
See if I can get on with Steve Inskeep. All right.
Shots fired.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. He's great. He's terrific.
is that your Inskeep impression?
No, I'm saying that's
he's
what I'm
terrific,
saying.
Steve Inskeep.
That's my not terribly sincere voice.
So, in other words, that's your Steve Inskeep impression?
Indeed. Yeah. Speaking of Steve Inskeep, this morning, the ever-entertaining Sebastian Gorka was on Morning Edition, and and before we get to Donald Trump's speech last night and some of the points about healthcare that I want to make on this day that they're going to roll out their plan. Well, let's listen to a little bit of Sebastian Gorka. We'll have a little bit in a bit. I should also say that, and I don't know if it was anything that I did, but Sebastian Gorka used to have Sebastian Gorka, PhD, in his Twitter handle. And I had tweeted recently, I think working on a theory that having PhD in your handle correlates with being full of shit. And there was a couple of actual legitimate professors who tweeted at me and were like, hey, somebody had already taken my name. And but now he's just known as the lovable Dr. G on Twitter.
Ew, that's gross.
Well, it rolls off the tongue.
That's gross.
I can't wait. Now, so here he is, Dr. Gorka on, honestly, like, if you put on the Chiron, and now this is a picture of him from what, C-SPAN? Yeah. If you book this guy and you put on his Chiron, this is obviously from radio, but if you put on his Chiron, Dr. Gorka, I think you really should just put in parens, he asked us to put doctor on there. But here he is, Dr. Gorka, on NPR's Morning Edition with Steve Inskeep, responding to the story that Donald Trump told the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. And we're seeing, we've seen tens, dozens and dozens of calls, I think, to 60 JCCs around the country, maybe 150 bomb threats. We've seen, at least in St. Louis and I think in another cemetery, I think in Philadelphia, not sure, where Jewish cemetery headstones were pushed over. Apparently, Donald Trump implied that sometimes it's reverse. Sometimes people are doing it to make it look like there's anti-Semitism. And here is Dr. Gorka defending that comment.
The Pennsylvania Attorney General met with the president, among others, yesterday, and heard the president say something different about these synagogue attacks, that sometimes such attacks could be made to make others look bad, as if they were false flag operations, is what they're called. Are the threats on synagogues around the country a false flag operation?
Of course not. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been the opening comments of the president's speech. But if you deny the fact that we have found individuals red-handed...
Pause it for one second. I should tell you that the presence of something in a speech by any politician does not necessarily impact the reality on the ground. I think that's his way of saying that, largely speaking, he recognized he needed to say something about it. But all right, just dial it back just a little bit.
In the opening comments of the president's speech, but if you deny the fact that we have found individuals red-handed across college campuses and elsewhere manufacturing fake graffiti attacks or threats of attacks and been found out to be simply doing so because they don't like President Trump and his administration, both things can exist at the same time, Stephen. That's the reality.
All right, so let's break those qualifiers down. Here, let's just play it again. Because the question was, these attacks on Jewish synagogues, do you think that they're false flag? And then his response is to answer something completely different. Continue.
With the president, among others, yesterday, and heard the president say something different about these synagogue attacks, that sometimes such attacks could be made to make others look bad, as if they were false flag operations, is what they're called. Are the threats on synagogues around the country a false flag operation?
Of course not. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been the opening comments of the president's speech. But if you deny the fact that we have found individuals red-handed across college campuses
Pause
and
it.
Elsewhere.
College campuses. That's one place. college campuses where there's not the synagogues.
Certainly.
But yes, we've caught them. We've caught them red-handed. We have. Part of my special capturing false flag anti-Semitic.
I have three jobs. Parts of my job description.
Here we go. ISIS. Wait a second. Like, can you please?
Individuals red-handed across college campuses and elsewhere, manufacturing fake graffiti attacks or threats of attacks and
pause. Manufacturing fake graffiti, not genuine.
My father, on the other hand, manufactured quite sincere swastika graffiti.
I totally have the ability. I put in my special monocle, and I can look and see the authentic graffiti.
Oh, no, that is totally a fake swastika. I would know.
As you can see, there's no point. There's no love here manifested in the 90-degree angle.
No appreciation for the craftsmanship. No, it's really just Jew bathroom humor. Quite pathetic, SJW.
And then the
Nazi swastika points to the right, as anyone would know.
Yes, quite basic. As a matter of fact, you can see a bubble here in my dissertation.
They're also manufacturing, he's saying, they're also manufacturing not just fake swastikas, but manufacturing threats to fake vandalism. The old, watch out, we're going to spray swastikas on your locker trick.
The Jew, as you know, is quite a big fan of the prank phone call medium. It is part of the sickness of the Jew reptile brain. Anyways, next question, Steve.
Jew reptile brain.
Right, what's that? Anyways, thanks. All right, so you got to plan to defeat ISIS, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks for coming on Morning Edition.
We will play a little more Gorka later. But first, I should tell you that it's Wednesday. It's 2 days after I got back from vacation. Of course, I could have come in with a full beard yesterday, and there was probably a time in my past, in my youth, when I would have. But instead, on Sunday night, for no reason, I had no reason to shave. But I don't have that deep, deep reluctance to shave that I had before. I just have deep reluctance to shave. But Harry's has taken away one of the deeps, as it were. Why? Well, because really, two reasons. One, it gives me a great shave. Two, not so expensive. Personally, for me, the thing I like about it best has a narrow shave head. Is that what you call that? Not blade. Obviously, the blades are pretty narrow because that's what makes them sharp. But the whole head is narrower. I don't know why that's been a problem with me in the past. But also, in terms of quality, they cost a fraction of what those big-name brand razors cost. Harry's was started by two guys, Jeff and Andy. They were fed up with being overcharged for razors.
It's ridiculous price structures.
So they decided to start their own razor company, and they bought a factory with 100 years of blade-making experience. And now they can ship them directly to you for half the price of the leading brand. Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Five German engineered blades, lubricating strip, flex hinge for a comfortable glide, trimmer blade for hard to reach places, like I mentioned earlier, weighted ergonomic handle.
My nose.
And all this for $2 a blade compared to the $4 you're going to pay at a drugstore. And this is, I had to read this twice. They're so confident in the quality of their blades, not that part. They want you to try their most popular trial set for free, ladies and gentlemen. If you've never tried Harry's, now's the time to do it. Comes with a razor handle of your choice, 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel.
Just like healthcare should be in this country.
Free when you sign up. Just pay a small fee for shipping. To redeem your free trial, go to harrys.com/majorityreport right now. That's harrys.com/majorityreport. Okay, so last night, Donald Trump gave a speech. He was heavily sedated at the beginning of the speech. And it was interesting because I saw half of it on TV, the second half, in real time. And then I listened this morning to the first half. And when you listen, it was even worse. Because you can just, like, he's just reading it and whatnot. But I will concede, he did not spend a significant portion of his first address to a joint assembly of both houses talking about how he really won the election in a big way. And so because of that, apparently, he is being hailed by many in the Beltway press as having delivered a masterful speech.
Yeah, and you save the electoral victory stuff for, like, when you're getting a question about, like, hate crimes or something.
Or when you're talking to the CIA.
Or when you're talking to the CIA, or so, when you're meeting with the head of state.
Yeah, and so, you know, this guy delivered a speech that was not particularly good. It certainly wasn't, full of specifics. And there was a tremendous amount of lying going on in it. I mean, there's just no, the fact is that the drug problem in this country is not a function of drugs pouring into the border at an unprecedented level. The primary driver of the biggest drug problem we have in this country was the pouring in, and when you talk about pouring into a border, you're talking about drug manufacturers pouring things like OxyContin into states within this country. The drug problem, to a large extent, the one that we have in this country in terms of opioid deaths, was driven by the overprescription and the overselling and the off-label selling of opioids. That's just one that just pops into my head. And then we'll go through some more of these. Here is Trump announcing that he has fulfilled his drain the swamp pledge. A reminder they're working on it. Here is the response. And look at that. There's Tweedledee and Tweedledum. You've got Paul Ryan and Mike Pence, who seem to have coordinated their outfits. Now, that's odd, isn't it? I mean, yeah, you often see politicians wear the same suits and whatnot, but to actually have almost identical uniforms, I'm just trying to think, like, what does this remind me of? I can't think. All right.
Oh,
well,
that's a really unfortunate joke that you're making. It's just, oh. Mm.
Of course, doesn't mean anything. There's not wearing high
they're blue leather ties.
Boots.
You
on.
Wear pseudo Mandarin collars with a chain that means roughly in Latin, those who roam our lands, who killed Christ, shall be destroyed.
All right, here is Donald Trump promising to drain the swamp, eliciting laughs from everyone in the room.
We have begun to drain the swamp of government corruption by imposing a 5-year ban on lobbying by executive branch officials and a lifetime ban. Thank you.
He took a sip of water.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And
for
a lifetime
that. I needed to
ban
take a...
on becoming lobbyists for a foreign government.
Mm. That way I've got it all cornered.
Why would you become a lobbyist when you can literally get, as an example, maybe a direct cut of a major energy conglomerate and be president?
Right. And you could also be Secretary of State. I mean, if you wanted to. The 5-year ban on lobbying, you should know, was first instituted by Bill Clinton and then first by executive order removed by Bill Clinton just before people by the end of his administration. So not necessarily etched in stone. That swamp won't be drained, apparently, until Donald Trump leaves office. So I don't know if anybody, I can't, it's hard to tell who stood on the Democratic side, but I don't know who that is. I mean, there's a couple of people, obviously, who have, but it's hard to tell. I mean, you know, you get 435 members of the House. And also in the Donald Trump announcing something called Voice. What is this? A way to promote that immigrants occasionally commit crime and to hide the fact that they actually commit crime at a rate less than those of American citizens. But you need a program to highlight when immigrants commit a crime so that it feels to the rest of us that they commit crime at a greater rate than native-born Americans.
And we must support the victims of crime. I have ordered the Department of Homeland Security to create an office to serve American victims. The office is called Voice, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. We are providing a voice to those who have been ignored by our media and silenced by special interests.
Okay. Now, hold on. First off,
definitely sassy Trump right there.
Remember here, they're creating a federal bureaucracy for people who are victims of state crimes. And then they're also adding an O into the acronym just to make it clever.
Do you know what that money would be really useful for? Is the massive
anything else
backlog of rape kits across the country.
Oh, Kelly. That wouldn't give people a voice. How would you do that? Just think about this for a second. How would you come up with an acronym for that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm all for rape kits, but just can't be turned into an acronym. Police so forget about it.
Across the country have in their possession proof of criminality, and it just sits there.
Also, I should note,
I'm going to freak out. I'm not going to freak out.
Don't freak out. Victims of immigrant crime and engagement, that actually spells out vice, not voice.
If you put the O in there, though, Sam.
Right. You just got to drop the O in there.
Usually you drop those kinds of great words speech. In acronyms, but we needed that. We need that word.
I did the acronym thing. Check. Did the drain the swamp. Here is.
This complete nonsense immigrant demonizing, which is actually. That was the main part of his campaign, too. It wasn't just that he personally demonized immigrants. He would bring up people who were clearly traumatized by having, like, a daughter that happened to be murdered or a son that was murdered, and you know, that happened to be by an undocumented person. And he would bring them out on stage. Those were mainstays of his rally. So this is basically a federal bureaucracy that will basically just be a re-election campaign ad generator.
And
that's what it is.
Yes, indeed. And people should also note that he was also talking about restricting legal immigration into this country.
That's obviously the game plan.
All right, let's now go to the moment.
Miller, Bannon, Sessions.
Indeed. Let's go to the moment where Donald Trump, according to Katie Turr from NBC News, she said,
she's so wack.
This is the moment where Donald Trump was at his most capital P presidential.
I love it.
The moment where Van Jones said he became president of the United States. Now, this is rote, typical thing that a president does. But he did it in the most ultimately crass possible way. He has invited the widow of the Navy SEAL killed in Yemen. It was Ryan Owens was the Navy SEAL. Hours earlier in the day, yesterday morning, Donald Trump said essentially it was the general's fault. But politicians always realize, recalibrate. But the idea that he would receive praise for this moment where what he does is, there she is. And I'm just going to hang back and allow the applause go. Here we go.
I just spoke to our great General Mattis just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy. Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, and then this applause goes, and then what Donald Trump follows it up with is this really incredible, just crass response to the idea that, yeah, of course, you've sent this...
And Ryan is looking down right now, you know that, and he's very happy because I think he just broke a record.
Now, the record that he broke, apparently, was he got, according to Donald Trump, a large applause. Of course, Ryan is happy now that he's been able to leave his earthly self. For an extended applause. And this moment was hailed as being extremely presidential for some reason.
So if I had known that getting killed in Yemen in the process of killing several children and leading to an operation which probably didn't lead to anything, maybe a couple of thumb drives, possibly, missing earthly life, my family, and being dead. If I knew that that would lead to one of the longest applause breaks at a joint session of Congress, worth it.
Let me just read from NBC News. Despite the fact of what Donald Trump claims General Mattis said, who last month's deadly commando raid in Yemen, which cost the lives of a U.S. Navy SEAL and a number of children, has so far yielded no significant intelligence, U.S. officials told NBC News. Although Pentagon officials have said the raid produced actionable intelligence, senior officials who spoke to NBC News said they were unaware of any. Even as the father of the dead SEAL questioned the premise of the raid in an interview with the Miami Herald. A senior congressional official briefed on the matter said the Trump administration has yet to explain what prompted the rare use of American ground troops in Yemen, but said he was not aware of any new threat from al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the al-Qaeda affiliate that was targeted. So there you have it.
And they also, I mean, you know, of course, for what it's worth, and it's a, this wouldn't justify the killing of an eight-year-old child, but the actual target of the operation was not. They didn't get him, and the
It's unclear whether or not that was the actual target. Or just the intelligence.
Even that part is unclear. Yeah. Jesus Christ!
All right,
it wasn't just one child. It was
eight children.
Yeah.
So
I'm also talking specifically about
an American citizen.
That's right.
Who apparently did not get a record-breaking applause line.
Right.
However, on CNN. Where the rush to normalize this president and to revert to being able to judge politics specifically and exclusively on the basis of demeanor. And to be fair, this was also part of the problem with the strategy of the Clinton campaign and to a certain extent with Democrats now, which is to criticize Donald Trump because he's a buffoon, because he says things like, I can grab pussies, or because he goes in front of inappropriate places and talks about how he won the election and tells outright fabrications about things that are obvious, as opposed to things that, you know, if you're a journalist, you would know. You know, like, he can get up there and say, I'm 8 feet tall. And everybody can say, well, that's clearly a lie.
Well,
but when he gets up there and he says lies about policy or lies about immigrants, that would actually involve somebody who did, you know, a Google search to find out about.
Then aren't we back in George W. Bush territory?
Exactly, exactly. And here is Van Jones in his rush to pronounce this.
He became president of the United States in that moment, period. There are a lot of people who have a lot of reason to be frustrated with him, to be fearful of him, to be mad at him. But that was one of the most extraordinary moments you have ever seen in American politics, period. Ew. And he did something extraordinary. And for people who have been hoping that he would become unifying, hoping that he might find some way to become presidential, they should be happy with that moment. For people who have been hoping that maybe he would remain a divisive cartoon, which he often finds a way to do, they should begin to become a little bit worried tonight. Because that thing you just saw him do, if he finds a way to do that over and over again, he's going to be there for 8 years. Now, there is a lot that he said in that speech that was counterfactual.
All right, okay. He qualifies his comments by saying, yes, he lied in the speech and said things that weren't true. But if he finds a way to send ground troops into foreign countries for no apparent reason and gets one of them killed and has the opportunity to say that... point out the widows of those or widowers of those, he is going to be so presidential. And remember now, what did he do? He just said, there she is. And what does he mean at that moment? I mean, what is it that he did?
Kills.
What did he actually do at that moment? This is so absurd that, I understand the idea that he is saying this metaphorically speaking, because A, we know Donald Trump was already the president. Donald Trump was the president when they sent these people on this mission. So the idea that Donald Trump, it wasn't clearly his idea, right, to have this woman there. I mean, this morning, earlier in the morning, he said in an interview that it wasn't even his fault. The idea that he read this speech and delivered that, essentially what Van Jones is saying is that being presidential is either glorifying the death of the military, personnel, or just being able to deliver a fairly saccharine moment that every president seems to do. I mean,
well, let's be honest. Functionally, that's kind of true. I mean, I actually was reminded, I have to say, and I know that like there are distinctions here because this was just logistically totally botched, but like that to me, like this speech reminded me in the reviews of like, okay, we're in George W. Bush territory, like we said before, because he's lying about policy instead of just like things that you were pointing out, like actual literal, you know, no, you're not 8 foot. And then something like that was kind of, to me, a bit like the Obama section, frankly. Like, there was a lot of people who were willing to overlook civilian deaths in Yemen and Pakistan and those types of raids with Obama. And then Obama would give, much better than Trump, but a classy sort of tip of the hat to service people. And that seemed to satisfy a lot of people culturally in terms of signifiers.
I mean, think that's true.
So it's
I
not terribly surprising.
I can't imagine, though, that Van Jones ever made that declaration that that's the moment that Barack Obama became presidential. And I certainly don't think that happened.
Well, they're saying it's
the
moment he became like Barack Obama, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean,
Obama didn't need to do that. Obama's always classy.
Van Jones in that moment had a Glenn Beck thing going on where he was obviously feeling the sound of his own voice, and he goes like this, and I want to go like this, and like that sort of thing.
And I think that's also just the pathology of always trying to buy currency with the other side that some liberals have. It's almost like, hey, you know, Jeff Lord, like, you're never going to concede a point, but watch me be reasonable.
Right. Well,
maybe
I think that's
he's
also
trying to keep his job.
I think that's also a business. I think that.
Yeah,
that's
what I mean. It's a business.
Not necessarily a pathology as much as it is a.
But it's a business opportunity.
Core brand
more,
proposition.
But it's a core brand proposition on our side. There's no major conservative market for like, when are you going to be reasonable, man?
Right. Right. You don't hear Gorka at CPAC with people coming up like, Dr. G, when are you going to be a little bit more reasonable?
Dr. G, don't you
Islam
need to do a, yeah, don't you need to tip a hat to the Sufis or Indonesian Muslims to establish that we're not deranged extremists? Because if we do, then liberals will only get more upset.
And then
that would be really beautiful. If that
I want to get to the healthcare
right.
thing too, but let's just, I mean, look, I don't know what the breakdown of people who watched this speech was in terms of Republican versus Democratic. We don't
this
know.
This is the future of the Democratic Party right here.
We don't know the ratings yet on this, and we know that something like two-thirds of the people felt that the speech was good and favorable for Donald Trump. Not terribly surprising. Like I say, you know, people don't listen to people don't. Don't dig deep into the difference between the actual policies and the reality on the ground, and we don't know the makeup of the people listening to the Trump speech. I would imagine that there's a significant number of Trump supporters who are able to sit through an hour long speech and aren't, you know, don't have it as their job to do, but the Democrats had, and it's unclear why they decided this was the route to go, but the Democrats chose Steve Beshear, a former governor of Kentucky, out of politics now, well known for establishing a very successful Obamacare exchange that Kentuckians probably weren't fully aware was the Obamacare. It was called Kentucky Connect. And they decided to take this 70-odd-year-old man, and, you know, I'm in favor of 70-year-old white men. I mean,
you will be one,
supportive.
Hopefully, one day.
Well, hopefully one day I will be, and I supported one in the Democratic primary.
If you ever call me white again, I will fucking strip the bark off of you.
But they placed him in a diner, which apparently was not serving any food. And
I think that's an AA meeting, to be honest.
It looks like an AA meeting. Everybody's there with like completely cleared tables, although they left the... the ketchup and the, which in my restaurant experience, they take those things off the tables because you're washing them and you're going to stack the chairs so you can wash the floors. So who knows how they decide to set this up. But everybody's just sort of sitting there like wax figurines watching this guy who just happens to be talking to the camera. Now, maybe this is why they got a former governor as opposed to a sitting one, because no one wanted to be put in this position. And I guess the idea is this is a guy who will probably appeal to the Trump voters who are watching, was the theory, I guess. But again, a missed opportunity to present any type of Democratic vision. In fact, he said he's a very proud Republican in the beginning, which I think was a mistake, but I don't know.
I'm a proud Democrat, but first and foremost, I'm a proud Republican and Democrat and mostly American. And like many of you, I am worried about the future of this nation.
What are you talking about?
I mean,
was it George Bush Sr. that said, "I'm not good at the vision thing"? Is that where that quote comes from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Democrats. Well,
I mean, I think this was a miscalculation. And again, the miscalculation was, we're going to put up a guy who Trump would be if he wasn't a little bit off in the head, if he knew what he was talking about, and was a little bit more soft-spoken. And it turned out that Trump was reading a speech and was a little more soft-spoken. So this just turned out to be just a slightly older, calmer version of...
And what Bashir's referencing there is, I think, one of his friends, Thomas Jefferson, when he gave his inaugural address, said that we are all Federalists, we are all Republicans.
I'm going to come out there and I'm going to whack them with the old obscure Jefferson reference that only young fellas who listen to books on tape at high speeds will understand.
Meanwhile, nobody behind him seemed to have any type of reaction.
They're all, this is great. Anyways, it's like, dude, you're supposed to say how you started having a problem with drinking. Not going to exactly. Random Obamacare discord.
My name is Steve Bashir, and I'm an alcoholic. Ah, well, Steve!
I honestly think that Kentucky Connect would still be in operation today had I not allowed it to spin out of control with my dependency on alcohol.
Let's backpedal on the libel.
We're doing a bit.
We're doing a bit, Governor
and
Bashir.
There it is. Done.
A bit is comedy, because even though I am an analyst and a comedian, I'm first and foremost an American.
That's right.
And an alcoholic. We are all comedians.
I hit rock bottom. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about this because, we're running late. I really want to have a debate with somebody about healthcare, so I don't want to burn it right now.
Hi, Steve. I can't. Phone connects pretty bad, but if you let people buy insurance across state lines,
well,
we would all
actually
be living in the Jetsons.
Somebody,
communist.
You know what? Somebody had a question. Let me just address that then. Somebody had a question on Twitter about the question of selling across state lines, and there were 4 points here. Let's listen to the. The guiding principles, the five principles that Donald Trump lays out here, and I will just go through these briefly, and why this is going to be a disaster and can't happen. Or, if you got to parse, remember, Bernie Sanders told us what access means. You all have access to buying Donald Trump's homes. All you need are millions of dollars, or the ability, to be fair, to go to a bank and borrow millions of dollars.
We have access.
Here is Donald Trump talking about what he is promising when it comes to the Republican healthcare repeal and replace plan.
Here are the principles that should guide Congress as we move to create a better healthcare system for all Americans. First, we should ensure that Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage and that we have a stable transition for Americans currently enrolled in the healthcare exchanges.
All right, pause it. So access to coverage. In other words, prior to Obamacare, if you had a pre-existing condition, you could be denied coverage and there could be no place for you to get it. Now, in 35 states as of 2008, 34 states, I think it was, there were high-risk pools, which served state high-risk pools, 200,000 people. You've heard these numbers I've told you before. There are, it is estimated that the number of people with pre-existing conditions in this country that would be, is somewhere between 20 and 30 million people. Okay, so they're basing that their pre-existing condition on a system that could only sustain 200,000 people because the premiums were so high. So you have access. You just may not be able to afford it. Next up.
Secondly, we should help Americans purchase their own coverage through the use of tax credits and expanded health savings accounts. But it must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government.
Okay, pause it there. So now what they're saying is health savings accounts, which are really helpful if you're rich, because you get a tax-free way of saving money and you can use it as you want. You can sustain more risk because you're rich, perhaps, for healthcare. Tax credits, unclear. This is going to be a big fight in the amongst the Republicans, whether or not this will be a refundable or non-refundable tax credit. So, in other words, a non-refundable tax credit is if you owe the government $1,000 in taxes and you get a $1,000 tax credit, non-refundable, or let's say a $1,500 tax credit because you've paid for health insurance, you get $1,000 off your tax bill, period. But if it's refundable, you actually get a check for $500 back from the government. And that's a big fight, but that's basically what is known as a subsidy that exists in Obamacare. And some Republicans don't want to just replace Obamacare with Obamacare when it comes to subsidies. Others do. But the second part of what Donald Trump there said was, we're no longer going to mandate to insurance companies that they actually sell a product that does what it purports to do. So the idea of the patient's bill of rights, that your health insurance can't have caps, annual or lifetime, that it must cover X, Y, and Z to constitute legitimate health insurance, that's going to be out the window. So people can sell you something called health insurance, but when you need it the most, it very well may not be there. Continue.
Thirdly, we should give our state governors the resources and flexibility they need with Medicaid to make sure no one is left out.
All right, pause this. Now, this is where it gets really tricky, because what Paul Ryan wants to do and the rest of the Republicans in Congress is they want to block grant the state's Medicaid. In other words, here's a fixed amount of money based on how many people are in your program today. And this is a fixed amount of money. So if you have more people who need to be on it in the future, because let's say we have a financial crisis, or if the cost of health insurance increases, and it went up by 50% from like 2002 to 2010, if it increases, you're SOL. And it also allows you as a state governor to say, screw it. We're not going to cover as many people on Medicare. Instead of going up to 133% of poverty for states that are already covering all those people, or even 100% of poverty, we're going to drop it down to people who are living at like 70% of poverty, and we're going to use the rest of the money to offset tax cuts. And just to give you a sense of how bad of an idea this is, and while it's unsettled, is because guys like John Kasich, Republican governors, don't want these funds cut. They don't want the Medicaid provisions cut because it's working in their state and they're saving money. Continue.
Fourth, we should implement legal reforms that protect patients and doctors from unnecessary costs that drive up the price of insurance, and work to bring down the artificially high price of drugs and bring them down immediately.
All right, that's fourth. Now, what he's saying there is medical tort reform, which has been proven time and time again to have no bearing on the cost of medicine. You can see that Texas has rolled back their, has implemented medical tort reform. And the idea that they should drive down the cost of drugs, how should that happen? It's a
just
nice idea.
Do it. Just do it.
You can tell they tacked that on to number four, right? They wanted five principles. Tort reform and driving down the price of drugs, not clear how that happens. I guess unless, of course, you're saying to drug companies, you're no longer going to be subject to lawsuits when, let's say, that drug that you started selling off-label ended up killing people.
So this is great. So now we can boost prices and still be not accountable in even new ways.
Well, but you should drop them.
Totally should.
And number five, here's that one that I got the tweet about.
And finally, the time has come to give Americans the freedom to purchase health insurance across state lines.
Now, this one gets a rousing applause from the Republicans because it's part of their fantasy life that somehow, if you sell health insurance across state lines, you're going to create more competition. But the bottom line is, and this is, and you can hear this from conservative healthcare and insurance analysis, that the reason why, and there's about four or five states that already allow cross-state purchase of health insurance, but the health insurance companies are not interested in it. Remember, I've told you there's two types of insurance in this country. There's the employer insurance, which in fact does not involve the insurance company in doing anything other than administering the health insurance. The employer pays for it. Premiums pay for it. They don't have any money that they're risking. It's not risk control. It's administrative. The individual markets, the reason why insurance companies are neutral at best about the ability to sell across insurance state lines and are probably a little leery of it because they want it to be out there as if it sounds like it's one of the problems, is that they know that they would have to go in and spend a tremendous amount of money to build a network of providers. They have moved over the years from a volume business to an outcomes-based business. In other words, you get paid based upon how healthy you keep your patients, not how much service you provide. And this requires a lot of technology and a lot of awareness of the environment in which they're selling it. So they're not terribly interested in it. But it is this myth. And the only problem from a liberal perspective on why this would be a problem is that because the Republicans, I think it was in principle number three, are going to get rid of the patient bill of rights, saying that insurance has to be actual health insurance that helps you, is that if you have every state deciding their own, insurance companies are all going to try and base themselves in the state that basically says you can sell a car without an engine and call it a car. But if you were to have the controls of a patient bill of rights across the states, allowing for this cross-state insurance business, it would be fine and nothing would change because the insurance companies themselves, it's not regulatory that's keeping them from doing this. It's their own business models. So, what's that?
I could see Trump.
It's not up?
There you go.
I could see Trump personally jumping into the insurance game.
I will. I'll sell it. I'll sell it.
As soon as the standards get lowered enough, it's the new it's the Trump University of Healthcare. There you go.
Trump University Insurance.
Trump Care.
The look on Paul Ryan's face during that whole thing just tells you that I mean, anytime he looks like that, you're just going to, you know, you're going to die.
I'm orgasmic. Exactly. There are children that are going to starve. It's almost like, you know, the Obama speeches when he would really start to, you know, like sail, where he just like, got more people have health care. There's
Joe
more
Biden
opportunity.
Would just be like, giddy.
Yeah. And then, but it's like Ryan's just like, more children are going to suffer and more minors are going to have black lung disease. And more rivers are going to be polluted. And the Koch brothers are going to have even more couch change in the millions. That's the America I see. That's what we're fighting for.
I think it's like his look definitely goes from that, like the cat that ate the canary, to just sort of looking at the back of Trump's hair and trying to figure out what's going on there.
This is fascinating. What's actually happening there? Oh, more kids are poor. Great. Let me stand up for that one.
That's
all right.
Wonderful.
And then right. Pence is there just like, it's the Lord's plan.
We're going to head into the fun half. Sorry for members yesterday that we had a delay. Apparently, the Amazon service went out across the entire internet yesterday.
Completely unfair.
Folks, you can become a member of the Majority Report for pennies a day. And as our way of saying thank you for supporting the free show, we give you an extra hour, hour and a half of content, maybe sometimes more, commercial-free every day. Maybe like 6 days, 10 days out of the year, we don't do that. Somewhere between 5 and 10. So become a member today. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. And don't forget, on Saturday, April 8th, we have the our live show at the Bell House. The Bell House in Brooklyn. I can never remember. I have some type
the
of
Bell
block.
House.
Matt Taibbi, Janine Garofalo will be joining us.
Oh boy.
It will be fun.
It's gonna be big.
It's gonna be so big. And we're just about, I don't know if we're sold out, but what's his face? God, I can't remember now who I'm even talking about.
Now.
He showed me pictures on Twitter. I retweeted it.
John Benjamin?
No.
I have no idea what you're talking
One
about.
One of our IMers. I can't.
Ronald Reagan?
No.
Lefty Uno?
No. God darn it, from Connecticut.
You don't know anything.
I can't remember anything.
I don't
if it doesn't
remember.
Have to do with if it doesn't have to do with high
buying
state
insurance
high risk
across state lines. I know. My daughter's name, hello? I was telling you yesterday how during your kids' bat mitzvahs, you really need to just have your phone, like, gone.
Why, so I'm not
because it would be
out?
Such a perfect time to troll you on Twitter. You hold on one second.
I'm at my daughter's bat mitzvah during the thing.
Good, good. You should keep that close to the vest.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. See you in the fun half.